Blog Talk Radio.
My name is Moy Lawson, and welcome to Liberty Newscast. It is a special edition, a Friday evening edition, something that we don't normally do. Actually, you know, I don't know if there's anything that we normally do yet. We started on February 1st. It is March 15th. It is the Ides of March. Yesterday was Pi Day. For those of you who are about math, it was Pi Day, and today is the Ides of March, which is the 15th of March. Those of you who went to public school, that had to do with a very famous play by Shakespeare, Julius Caesar. But anyway, you don't care. So those of you who are not watching CPAC on the TV or on the on C-SPAN, maybe you'll go, oh man, I'm tired of that. Maybe I need some Liberty News. Yeah, that Lawson guy is pretty good. Thanks for listening in. We appreciate it. No, we are not doing the Google Hangout this evening that is normally attached. We will do a special Google Hangout tomorrow, we will do that in the afternoon and go over some of the same stories and some new stuff, because there's always new stuff going on. It's going to be interesting day. You know that CPAC is going on now. And we've had some great speeches, and we've had some interest. You know what? I think we are in some new territory as far as that goes. We are truly into some very new territory, and it's going to be interesting, I think, anyway, on how we come out of it. How do conservatives come out of some of this stuff? What are we going to be able to do? Are we going to be able to take from this something that, frankly, wins elections? We're talking about, we had a speech by Rand Paul. We'll play some of that. And Paul Ryan will play some of that. Tim Scott will play some of that. Marco Rubio will play some of that. Rick Perry will play some of that as well. I think it's going to be very interesting to figure out what are conservatives going to do. How are we going to play this strategically over the coming months? I was on the Ed Dean radio program this afternoon, and Ed Dean radio, and Ed Dean's a good friend of mine, and you can check out his show at eddeanradio.com. And we were on with some other folks doing roundtable, and it quite frankly seemed to me that these very, very good men, very good conservatives, kind of missed the point of some of this, because the idea is to win elections, and we here at Liberty News and Grass Fire Nation, although we are as conservative as they get, we also understand that this is about winning elections. If you cannot win elections, you do not get to set policy. If you do not win elections, and that seems like that would be easy for people to understand, but obviously it is not as easy for people to understand as you might imagine. But this is going to be a very interesting dynamic moving forward. Is Marco Rubio conservative enough? Is Ted Cruz going to be too much for the average? I mean, for the average schmo? Is Rand Paul hindered by the Paul name in a similar way? Is Jeb Bush, who's still lurking out there, is another Bush just too much? Is it too much? We've had little trouble getting them you know, getting a Bush elected, obviously. But is it too much? Is it too much Bush too soon? Could very well be. So a lot of questions left to answer as we move forward from this CPAC unto, you know, into whatever is to come next. So we'll talk about that. We'll talk a little bit about the lieutenant governor in the state of Florida resigning, and you've heard about that, and we'll talk about a little of the things that are going on there. We talked about that a little bit yesterday on the Liberty newscast. We'll see how that is going and how that may play out. And what does that mean for Governor Rick Scott? Rick Scott has been, up until recently, one of the Tea Party darlings and one of the conservative movement's governors, so to speak. So until he decided that he wanted to expand the Medicaid, the Medicaid exchange and expand Medicaid, Obamacade is what some people were calling it. He was a Tea Party darling. So we will see how that is going to play out in this whole investigation that is ongoing. All right, we're going to take a little break. We'll be back with more of the Liberty News PM edition, special edition to our show tonight. Tell your friends, tell your neighbors. We need as much help in getting this word out as possible. So if you can help us, we'll help you. We'll be right back with more of the Liberty Newscast right after these messages.
Welcome to Liberty News TV. I'm Norval Rose. The wrecking ball that is Obamacare continues to crash into the American healthcare system, private insurance companies, and consumers across the country. And the lies, deceptions, and distortions that were used to pitch the president's healthcare overhaul are now coming to light day by day, often in a blinding reality check. Private health insurance companies now warn of shocking premium hikes headed our way. Some Americans, they say, could see their health insurance bills double as the health care law adds millions to the rolls and imposes incredibly burdensome regulations on health care providers. And remember President Obama repeatedly promising that premiums would fall, not go up, but go down by an average of $2,500 per family. Dead wrong. And in spite of the president's not a single dime added to the deficit pledge as a result of Obamacare, the GAO now estimates $6.2 trillion will be added to our long-term deficits. Well, that's not a single dime. And the Obamacare wrecking ball is in full swing. A related story, another glaring example of progressive plantation mentality caretaking of the pitiful, powerless American population. A leftist professor at Georgetown University and a high-ranking official at the World Health Organization has come out in strong support of Nanny Bloomberg's attempted sugary drink soda ban, a ban that was just struck down by the courts. Listen to what this so much smarter than you and I, liberal professor Lawrence Gostin, writes about the attempted big drink ban. In fact, the Board of Health has the power, indeed the responsibility, he says, to regulate sugary drinks for the sake of city residents, particularly the poor. So what this self-important plantation owner is saying is that if you're poor, you're ignorant, undisciplined, incapable of knowing what's good for you, powerless against the conniving corporations, helpless, pitiful victims of a sugar-mad society that wants to make you fat and sick, and indeed without the benevolent intervention of the enlightened overlords, you're toast. Without us, they claim, you'd eat and drink yourself into an obese stupor of uncontrollable self-indulgence. Well, could it be that these elitist overlords, like the professor, are themselves the victims of overindulgence, of self-delusion, that they're the ones who are morbidly obese from their own self-inflated gaseous egos? Just asking. A couple other quick hits. Multiple sources now confirm that New Jersey Democrat Senator Bob Menendez is the subject of a grand jury investigation. Apparently not so much into his alleged sexual improprieties as his relationship with a wealthy and powerful Democrat donor in Florida. Also in Florida, what in the world are we coming to when state legislators feel it necessary to pass a law to restrict how people on government assistance spend that taxpayer money? Florida lawmakers are actually considering legislation which would ban those receiving government assistance from spending their electronic benefits, EBT, at strip clubs and casinos. Which we suppose means that in Florida they've actually had problems with people on the dole spending the money watching women on the pole and gambling their money away on a roll of the dice. Well, let's end on a high note. The weekday Ed Show with Ed Schultz is still slated for cancellation. But we continue to report the truth here at Liberty News, and we urge you to take action in defense of freedom. Check us out at libertynews.com and follow us on Twitter, where we are at Liberty Protecting It. I'm Norval Rose. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you next time.
Special PM edition. Again, thank you for tuning in. We appreciate it. This is so important. This is important that the independent conservative media is heard and the word is spread. It is obvious. It used to be a question. It used to be, well, you know what, maybe, you know, you see one of those things. But it is so plain that mainstream media is now the propaganda wing of this administration. They have completely come out of the closet. The genie is out of the bottle. I mean, you can use whatever analogy you want. It is game, set, match. There's no way to put this genie back in the bottle. The liberal media genie cannot go back into the bottle. It is out, and you know what? And this whole idea of the media somehow becoming more honest, becoming suddenly more unbiased and fair, and going back to what is real journalistic roots, it's all over. That time in American history sadly has come to an end. It was good while it lasted, if it was ever real. But it's over for sure now. We know for sure now. And again, on a high note, the Ed Show, the Daily Show, it's going away. It's going away. That's a shame. Yeah. All right. Bye, Ed. And he'll be on weekends, where absolutely nobody will watch him. Somebody mentioned today on the Ed Dean radio program I was on. Yeah. What are the 2,421 people who are listening, who are watching a show, going to do now? But in any case, that's why shows like this are important. That's why Liberty News TV is important. LibertyNews.com site is important. GrassFire.com are important. That's why we are important to the dialogue. I watched the Blog Bash Awards last night. As you know, my regular online radio show, Willie Lossinger, was nominated for a Blog Bash Award as one of the best podcasts 2012. We did not win. We were nominated. There were three nominations, and we were one of them, but we did not win. I would be lying to say that I wasn't a bit disappointed, but you know what? It is still amazing to be in that company. You know, But it told me as I was watching some of the other awards and watching the bloggers get together how important the their independence is. You know, we forget that people like Andrew Breitbart was an independent guy. We forget, and so many of us hold Andrew Breitbart in such high esteem. We forget that he was not part of the establishment. Just the opposite. And he did such a great job building an empire. We forget that we indeed here are doing the very same thing. We are standing on his shoulders doing the very same thing. And we're all part of it, whether we are producers of content or consumers of content. We are doing the same thing. So, again, congratulations to Ali Akbar and all the folks at Blog Bash. Thank you again for the nomination. We hope to have a couple of shows nominated next year. How about that one? How about having a Liberty Newscast Midday Edition nominated, as well as the Willie Lawson Show and some other shows? So, as a matter of fact, one of the my boss here at LibertyNews.com, Dwayne Lester, was the first winner of the Changing the Narrative, the Andrew Breitbart Changing the Narrative Award. He won last year at Blog Bash 2012. So you know what, we already have a history there, a winner and a nominee in consecutive years. So you know what, hey, we're coming back for you. We're coming back for that award in 2014. So again, thank you, Ali, for all your help and what y'all do over there at Blog Bash, and we're looking forward to being with you in 2014. All right. Before we get to more CPAC news, you know what is amazing? You know what's amazing? It's amazing the hubris. I've been waiting to use that word all day. That some folks who are in Congress have, especially if you are a senator and you have been in Congress for as long as some of these people have been in Congress, and long as some of these people have been in the Senate. It is absolutely, positively amazing. It is ridiculous, frankly. Let's see if we can keep this from coming up right now. Here you go. Coming up right away. You know, the Senate today, the Senate Judiciary Committee, passed the assault weapons ban, and it is headed to the Senate for a vote. Harry Reid has already made noise about not bringing it to the floor because he knows that it is DOA, or assumed anyway that it was DOA in the House of Representatives. So he had made noise about not bringing it. Now, John Boehner, thanks JB, has decided, he has made some noise on the Sunday shows that maybe he would consider it. Now, I'm not sure that he's considering. He's considering flushing in the toilet or maybe wiping his butt with it. I'm not sure exactly what he's considering, but it is at the point where it may indeed be brought up for a vote next week. So we will see. But in this conversation, there was an exchange between Ted Cruz of Texas and Dianne Feinstein, who this is her bill, where, of course, you know, Ted Cruz is really good at forming a question. Well, it's lengthy, but we've got some time. We'll play that exchange for you.
Otherwise, law-abiding citizens, inappropriately, in my view.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Cruz.
If I might pose a question to the senior senator from California. In your response to Senator Cornyn, you mentioned that there's some 100 pages of the bill that specify particular firearms that if this bill were passed, Congress would have deemed prohibited. It seems to me that all of us should begin as our foundational document with the Constitution. And the Second Amendment in the Bill of Rights provides that the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. The term, the right of the people, when the framers included it in the Bill of Rights, they used it as a term of art. That same phrase, the right of the people, is found in the First Amendment, the right of the people to peaceably assemble and to petition their government for redress of grievances. It's also found in the Fourth Amendment, the right of the people to be free from unreasonable searches and seizures. And the question that I would pose to the senior senator from California is, would she deem it consistent with the Bill of Rights for Congress to engage in the same endeavor that we are contemplating doing with the Second Amendment in the context of the First or Fourth Amendment? Namely, would she consider it constitutional for Congress to specify that the First Amendment shall apply only to the following books and shall not apply to the books that Congress has deemed outside the protection of the Bill of Rights? Likewise, would she think that the Fourth Amendment's protection against searches and seizures could properly apply only to the following specified individuals and not to the individuals that Congress has deemed outside the protection of the Bill of Rights?
Senator, you have a question?
Let me just make a couple of points in response. One, I'm not a sixth grader. Senator, I've been on this committee for 20 years.
Stop. You see, that's the deal. That's the idea. The question was, do you think that this is constitutional? I don't think it's constitutional. I don't think that you can, that Cruz is saying, I don't think you can pick and choose. I don't think it's constitutional that we can pick and choose. We can't. We can't pick and choose either all or none. You can't say that some, that you can say, well, you know what, we can, you said these people here, we can search and seize them anytime we get ready. Just like you can't, I mean, you can't. But her first response is, I'm not a sixth grader. You don't have to lecture me. I'm not a sixth grader. So she goes right to, I'm offended because you asked me a question. Well, you know what? Hell, you don't act like you know. So I think it's perfectly okay for Ted Cruz to ask the question. Here's her response.
Points in response. One, I'm not a sixth grader. Senator, I've been on this committee for 20 years. I was a mayor for 9 years. I walked in, I saw people shot. I've looked at bodies that have been shot with these weapons. I've seen the bullets that implode. In Sandy Hook, youngsters were dismembered. Look, there are other weapons. I'm not a lawyer, but after 20 years, I've been up close and personal to the Constitution. I have great respect for it. This doesn't mean that weapons of war, and the Heller decision clearly points out three exceptions, two of which are pertinent here. And so it's fine you want to lecture me on the Constitution.
Again, the idea is he still has not answered the question. I'm gonna cut the gentlewoman off. You haven't answered the question. He just looked at her like you. I love the expression on the dude's face. It's like, yeah, whatever. You know what? She still has not answered the question. The idea is still the same. Is this constitutional? I've been up and close and personal with the Constitution. That doesn't mean that you abide by it. That doesn't mean that you that we ought to go by it. You don't think that we can ignore it. You've been up close and personal. And what's being a lawyer have to do with anything? And she keeps saying, you know, I was a mayor for 9 months. For 9 years. What's that have to do with anything? The fact of the matter is, answer my question, is it constitutional? We'll hear a little bit more of her response.
Appreciate it. Just know I've been here for a long time. I've passed on a number of bills. I studied the Constitution myself. I am reasonably well educated, and I for the lecture. Incidentally, this does not prohibit, you use the word prohibit, it exempts 2,271 weapons. Isn't that enough for the people in the United
States? Let's back that up. Isn't that enough? Hang on a second.
And 71 weapons. Isn't that enough for the people in the United States?
Mr. Chairman?
Do they need a bazooka? Do they need other high-powered weapons?
That's the deal. She thinks that she can decide. See, this is the Nanny Bloomberg approach. She thinks that it's okay for her to decide, for her to decide what people need. You know, I had a conversation with my neighbor a few years ago when we were having high gas prices. Oh, that's right, we're still having high gas prices. But he mentioned some lady drive, you know, some 120-pound woman driving a Suburban. Does she need a Suburban? And I said, what difference does it make if she needs it, if she wants to buy it, and they can afford to buy it, and she likes driving it? Who are you or me or anybody to say what they need? And this is the very same sort of mentality that Feinstein's using. Well, they've got all these others. They've got all these others. They've got a blunderbuss. You know, they've got the Joe Biden shotgun. How much do they need? Do they need a bazooka? Well, nobody's talking about bazookas. And if they feel they need a bazooka, well, why not? But you know what? Who are you, Dianne Feinstein, to say what do they need? We'll continue with her response. We're going to play all of it.
Military people used to kill in close combat? I don't think so. So I come from a different place than you do. I respect your views. I ask you to respect my views.
Mr. Chairman.
I can respect your views, but I respect them as wrong. You know, that's another liberal tool that quite frankly, that I'm sick of. You respect my views. No, because you're wrong. Why do I have to respect the views of the wrong? Why do I have to respect the views of the abortionists? Why do I have to respect, you know what, do I have to respect the views and the feelings of the child molester? Oh, it's so great to see this video, and because she is visibly shaken. She is visibly shaken, and this is her bill, this is her baby, and he just stares at her like, you dumb broad. He would never say that. Ted Cruz is a gentleman. He would never say, you dumb broad. I said it, which is why I'm not a senator, and probably won't be anytime soon, not this week especially. But the idea is that he just asked a question. It's constitutional. And what did she do? She got on her emotional high horse. And did she answer his question? The answer is no. We'll continue.
Mr. Chairman, I can't add anything to that. Yeah. Senator Cruz?
Mr. Chairman, I would ask yet another question of the senior senator of California. I think nobody doubts her sincerity or her passion. And yet, at the same time, I would note that she chose not to answer the question that I asked, which is, in her judgment, would it be consistent with the Constitution for Congress to specify which books are permitted and which books are not, and to use the specific number?
The answer is obvious, no.
And if I may ask...
Could we keep on the... And I appreciate we have a discussion on books. I know that they have that in your state of Texas, where you're... educational boards tell people what books they should or should not read in their schools. Something that we would...
Okay. There's Senator Patrick Leahy, Democrat, trying to hop on. You see, well, there's districts in your state that say, well, books you can't read. You know what? Hell, there's every school. Let me help you. I worked in the public school system here in my area for 15 years. There are restrictions in every single, let me help you, Patrick Leahy, you moron. I'll help you. Patrick Leahy, you're a moron. Even in the who gives a crap state of Vermont, there are school districts, there are books that cannot be read. Sorry, can't be read. Can't be read by a fifth grader. You know, the Larry Flint story can't be read in a Vermont elementary school. Can't be read in a Vermont high school. Sorry. Can't read erotica. And there's a whole bunch of magazines that are not available in the public library. So shut your pie hole, Patrick Leahy.
Not doing Vermont, but, you know, we're not going to talk about your right.
Well, yeah.
But let's stick to guns. And I know Senator...
Mr. Chairman, I appreciate your acknowledging that the state of Texas allows books. I would specify a little more.
Yeah, about child pornography books? Child pornography? It's
protected by the First Amendment?
It's obvious that there are different tests on different amendments. And I think what the senator is going to point out was something that didn't occur to me at the moment. There are certain kinds of pornographic materials that would not be covered by the First Amendment.
And is it the view of the senior senator from California that Congress should be in the business of specifying particular books, or for that matter, with respect to the Fourth Amendment, particular individuals who are not covered by the Bill of Rights?
Sir, Congress is in the business of making law. The Supreme Court interprets the law. They strike down the law, they strike down the law. The tests in Heller, with respect to unusual weapons and two other things, I think do not cover, in other words, they cover an exemption for assault weapons. And if this is brought up before the court, if it should pass, I'm sure that argument will be made.
Senator from Illinois, that's exactly the point. The senator knows, having attended law school and professes to have some experience in the Constitution, none of these rights are absolute. None of them. And the Heller decision goes specifically to the question.
None of these rights. See, these are the Democrats, folks. This is what we're up against. Senator Dick Durbin of Illinois, where there's been more murder, there's been more gun restriction and more murder than any place in the freaking country. Even more people have been murdered in, we're talking about Illinois, in Chicago last year, 2012, over 500 people were murdered with guns in Chicago, where they have some of the most stringent gun laws in the world. More people were killed in Chicago than were killed in Afghanistan. So when Dick Durbin says, none of these rights are absolute, none of these rights are absolute. That's what Durbin says. None of these rights are absolute. What do you think? Do you think that the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution, none of the rights are absolute? The Fifth Amendment, none of these rights are absolute? The Tenth Amendment, none of these rights are absolute? That Congress can decide willy-nilly? And I hate to use that phrase because I hate that phrase when I use it because it's got my name in it. Are willy-nilly that whenever somebody decides, screw it, we're going to go after these people, we'll just do it. And Feinstein's answer, she still doesn't answer the question. Well, the idea is we make law. And if the Supreme Court doesn't like it, they'll shoot it down. Like, it's somehow not her responsibility. What she was saying, it's not my problem if this is against the Constitution or not. It's not my problem. I want to do it. And damn it, I'm going to do it. I don't care. That's what she's saying. And Durbin is saying, yeah, that's how we do it. Folks, if you do not think that it's time to start winning elections, you can have all the conservative pissing contests you want. You can have all the damn purity contests you want. But if you don't think it's time to start winning elections and turning these people back, we can just fold up the tent, you all. We can just fold up the tent because it's over. Yeah, I mean, if this goes another 10 years, it is game over here. We'll be back with more of the Liberty Newscast right after these messages.
Hi, I'm Ryan Seacrest for RAD. Over 300 people in this country are killed every week by a drunk driver. That's the equivalent of 2 747 plane crashes every single week. And the problem isn't going away unless we all do our part to stop it. So if you see someone who's about to drive after drinking, get the keys. Don't leave it up to anyone else. Friends don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service announcement brought to you by RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Confusion ever someone or have sudden you trouble had speaking, understanding?
Understanding trouble? Have you sudden have or speaking someone ever confusion?
Have you ever had sudden confusion, trouble speaking, or understanding someone?
It could be one of the five signs of stroke.
Sudden weakness or numbness of the face, arm, or leg.
Sudden trouble with vision in one or both eyes.
Suddenly having trouble walking or difficulty with balance.
Or a sudden intense headache that comes out of nowhere.
If you or someone you know has any of these symptoms, don't wait. Call 911 immediately. You could make a difference in someone's life, someone you love, maybe even your own.
It's late until, wait, don't too.
Don't wait until it's too late. Time lost is brain lost.
Find out more at powertoendstroke.org. Brought to you by the American Heart Association, American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Ozzy Osbourne. For many years, you know I've had a drink problem, and I'm trying to battle that problem every single day. But one thing I don't do, I don't drive my car when I'm drinking. I get someone to drive me. Do not drink and drive. It's the stupidest thing. If you drink, just don't drive. Not only are you going to hurt yourself, you may hurt some other person, and you wouldn't want that on your conscience, would you?
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
If you're a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, like me, coming home can be harder than expected. I felt a little out of place, but it turns out I wasn't alone.
At IAVA.org, there's a free online community of thousands of OIF and OEF vets who've got your back here, just like they did over there. So now, I'm never alone. I can get the resources I need and talk to tons of people who understand where I'm coming from.
Whether it's navigating the GI Bill
or VA hospitals,
managing the transition home, or meeting people you can share stories with,
you'll find it at IAVA.org.
Even if it's just everyday stuff.
Like getting tips on where to find a nice sweater for my dog.
Did he just say
sweater?
That?
Really?
What?
Okay, maybe not that, but everything else. No matter where you are, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org.
We've got your back.
Brought to you by Iraq Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
It's Thursday night, and you're grabbing drinks with some friends. Started off with a pitcher for the table, which quickly becomes two. There's pool. And there's the photo booth.
All right, everybody, squeeze in. Say cheese!
Followed naturally by an order of wings. And another.
Can we get some extra ranch sauce?
Then there's the ceremonial nightcap.
So what are we doing this weekend?
And lastly, it's back to the car, which, if you're buzzed... could be the most expensive night of your life. Getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
All right, we are back with the Liberty News cast, our special PM edition. Thanks so much for dropping by. That's the folks in the chat room. We appreciate you being here. We appreciate those who are listening in archives. We appreciate those who are listening and on the LibertyNews.com site. Listen, if you haven't been to LibertyNews.com, do that now because you're on the internet now. That's how you're listening to me. Go to the internet now. I mean, go to LibertyNews.com and bookmark the site. You know, it is a fantastic, absolutely a fantastic website. I mean, great writers there, fantastic writers, and you know what? And we've got some great contributing folks there. Warner Todd Houston and Michelle Malkin and Lee Elder and some great folks. You know what? It's townhall.com for the rest of us. It really is. My friend Eric Odom, my good friend and my boss. So I always say nice things about Dwayne Lester. He's my direct supervisor. So I always say good things about my boss. And he's fantastic and great. I mean, bringing great things to your attention. Jimmy Weiss Jr., Mitch Odom, a lot of folks doing yeoman's work. We are wholly owned and a subsidiary of the folks at Grassfire Nation, and that's Steve Elliott and his crew. So go to grassfire.com and check that out, because just super, super folks, super, super duper folks. So we appreciate them. They're doing a marvelous job. And they have to control people like me. and that's not so good. It's okay. You have to control people like me. So again, the website is libertynews.com and then grassfire.com. I'm going to talk about grassfire.com a little bit. Some of the resources that are available there, and good stuff there. Good stuff. All right, listen. Something's going on in Louisiana. Did you know that something's going on in Louisiana? Bobby Jindal is the governor there, and Bobby Jindal is thinking about doing this, getting rid of state income tax. Well, you know what? We here in Florida are saying, hey, no, Bobby, because he has New Orleans. You know what? If you got New Orleans and no state income tax, it's going to suck the business out of the rest of the country, even Florida, because as no income tax and what a tax haven it is here in the state of Florida, hell, we don't have New Orleans. So in an article by my boss, Duane Lester, Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal has joined other Republican governors in presenting a plan to eliminate the state's income tax. On Thursday, Republican Governor Bobby Jindal unveiled his proposal that would eliminate the state's income tax and corporate franchise tax by raising the sales tax to 5.88% from 4%. They still kicking our butts by half. The Florida sales tax is 7.5%. Man, you go from 5.88 and get rid of the state income tax, I'll take that deal. How about you? Would you take that deal? I would take that deal in a heartbeat. Jindal said that over the last 10 years, more than 60% of the 3 million new jobs in America were created by 9 states without an income tax. For the past 40 years, states without income taxes had faster growth than states with the highest taxes. I think it's a fantastic move. To go from 4% sales tax to 5.88 or 6% sales tax. That's another tax. That's a big tax. And it is. It's going to increase the tax on cigarettes. It is huge. So if you smoke, you ain't going to like this, because the tax on cigarettes will go from 36 cents per pack to $1.41. If you smoke, you're going to hate it. But they've had cheap cigarettes in Louisiana for years and years and years. So if you smoke, you're going to hate it. I get it. But the idea behind this, for the most part, is that would you trade that for no income tax? And the job possibilities that it brings. Would you trade? And I like the sales tax thing, because now we're back into a situation where people can decide, you buy this or you don't buy that. And that's how you decide how much tax you pay, by what you buy or what you don't buy. Now, some people are going to say this may be a bait and switch kind of thing. It's one thing or another. But I don't believe that. I believe that this is a fantastic move for the state of Louisiana. Now, as a citizen of the state of Florida, I'm not so happy about it, because I think that they can start sucking business out of Florida up to New Orleans. My God, man, have you ever been there? Oh God, I've got brain cells and they're still wandering around from 1981, wondering where I went. And I'm not just saying that it's a place to go get crazy, but it is an amazing city. Louisiana is an amazing state. They are a Gulf Coast state. They do get the benefits of all the things, all the beach things, all the stuff that happens here in Florida, and they've got frickin' New Orleans, and they will have no state income tax and a sales tax of only 5.88%. It's a genius move. What do you think is the possibility of this actually happening? I hope it's high, and I hope that Republicans and I hope that conservatives, even if you smoke, get behind Bobby Jindal and push this initiative. I think it's a very important initiative for job creation, and especially as being a resident of the South. I am a resident of the South, and I can still think I can, because I am a resident of the South, and I think it's a brilliant move by Bobby Jindal. It's just too doggone bad that Bobby Jindal had that that little Mr. Rogers moment right after the election of Barack Obama. I think it's just fantastic. You know, and here's the deal. Here's the crazy part. You ready? Here's the part where a lot of people, Republicans, Democrats, Independents, all statists, think that I got an idea. If it works in a state and job creation happens in a state, why wouldn't it work across the country? For Congress to pass the fair tax, which includes a repeal of the 16th Amendment, would find America once again to be a place that people would want to create and grow their businesses. Imagine if the United States became the tax haven of the world. How many businesses would come from around the planet to open businesses here, open factories here, open all sorts of things here that would employ our citizens, that you and I and the people we know would say, hey, listen, this is a great environment. This is a fertile environment to open businesses. You know, here are the numbers, ladies and gentlemen. Here are the numbers. Over the last 10 years, more than 60% of the 3 million new jobs in America were created by the 9 states without an income tax. 60% of those 3 million new jobs were created in states that didn't have an income tax. Now, Bobby Jindal wants Louisiana to get in on that. And for the past 40 years, states without an income tax had faster growth than states with the highest income taxes. For 40 years. So it would seem to be a no-brainer, wouldn't it? It would seem to be a no-brainer that a fair tax that includes the repeal of the 16th Amendment gets rid of the income tax because you can't have both. Can't have both. It's like people were freaking out over Herman Cain's 999 plan because they were saying, oh, 999 plus. No, he's not talking about 999 and. He's talking about 999 instead of what we got now is an income tax. Folks, it was never intended by our founders that we would pay tax on our income. That was never the intention, ever. It was never the intention of our founders, ever. As a matter of fact, they would be horror-stricken, absolutely horror-stricken to find out that we are wantonly taxing people's income and then taxing them again when they buy something, and then taxing them again. You know, they'll be horror-stricken. But again, if it works in a state, if it's been working in states for 40 years, why wouldn't it work on a national plan? The fact of the matter, here's why it wouldn't work, because there are too many people who benefit from the tax code. The reason we have lobbyists, let me tell you the reason we have lobbyists. Because people think that lobbyists are just there to pass out goodies. Trips, money, vacations, women. That's not why. Corporations, nonprofits, unions have lobbyists to make sure that the entity that they're representing benefits by the tax code. So everybody has their pie. That's exactly right, my friend John in the chat room. A competitive tax advantage. That's exactly right. That's exactly right. That's why we have lobbyists. Lobbyists aren't out there passing out money so congressmen can get a little extra money, make a little extra money on the side, you know. Although that sometimes ends up being a benefit. I mean, it ends up being the result that the Congress people make a little money on the side, take a little vacation, do a little bit of Evita Argentina, you know, open up that Swiss bank account. Oh, what bliss to sign your checks. 30127, never been accounts in the name of Ava Perone. You know, maybe that's it. But it is to get, and exactly as my friend John in the chat room says, to get a competitive tax advantage. And if you get rid of that, it turns the apple cart completely upside down. And what happens, not only don't they have that competitive tax advantage anymore, it allows real, live competition. It allows real, live innovation. And some companies, right, there's some corporations, there's some entities that are going to fight you tooth and toenail because they don't want a competition. They don't want competition. They got a good thing going. Oh, good, my rooster's got sound now. They've got, and now you've got sound and you might hate what I say. Now you wish you tuned into another show. Oh, I got sound, but this jerk here, gosh. It was better when I couldn't hear him. Well, that's good. I'm glad it's working. But you mean the idea is that these folks don't want competition. They've got it pretty good now. And some of them, like GE, who hasn't paid taxes since 1912, have a huge tax advantage. Thus, if they've got a good tax advantage, then they've got a bottom line advantage. And now they're able to suck up innovation, buy them out, sue them, do whatever. They don't want the guy in his garage anymore to come up with the idea. Some of these corporations, and John's exactly right, and some of these other entities do not want the innovation that's in some guy's garage. They don't want a Microsoft. Microsoft doesn't want another Microsoft. Apple doesn't want another Apple. They don't want people doing what they did. You know, it's interesting. Samsung, another huge company, but Samsung is released the Galaxy S4, I think. Yeah, S4. And I thought it was interesting because it's got a lot of cool features, folks. It just does. I'm not an Apple guy. I'm not an iPhone guy. But it's got a lot of really cool features. But you know, we were talking about it in my house because we're all, you know, we're not anti-Apple. We just haven't got hung up on the hype, but we just haven't. What? But Apple has been suing a crap out of Samsung for 3 years. Why? Because they think there's some copyright infringement, but that's not really it. They don't want the competition. They know that if some of the company gets a bigger foothold, especially in innovative technology in the same market, it takes away from their market share. It costs them money. Because of money. That is why. Yes, my rooster rates nearly every breath we take has a tax. That's very true. I mean, if they found a way to tax the oxygen, they'd be doing that. Actually, they're looking at a way to tax not the oxygen, but the carbon dioxide that we exhale. They couldn't find a way to tax the oxygen we inhale, so government is trying to find a way to tax the carbon dioxide that our body produces as we exhale. And then we would have to buy carbon credits to do that. You see, it's insane. It is absolutely, positively insane. You know, so here's what the deal is. Here's why I think, and when we take a short break, when we'll be back, because we're going to talk a little bit about CPAC. CPAC is going on right now. Why is this CPAC, in my opinion, extremely important? Because there's already been controversy about this CPAC because of some of the groups and some of the people that, you know, weren't invited. You know, this whole big deal, you know what, mainstream media is making a big deal about, oh, there must be problems in the GOP. Oh, there must be problems, conservative movement. They didn't invite your boy Chris Christie. How can they not invite Chris Christie? Do you, from a practical standpoint, do you invite the same same damn people every year? I mean, does anybody do that? Invite the same people every year? You know? Well, no, you don't invite the same people every year. That's first of all, that's dumb. So I don't think it's the end of the conservative movement or even the Republican Party that Chris Christie doesn't get an invite to CPAC. You know, I don't think it's the end of the world. I understand that S.E. Cup, who is a conservative lesbian, did not get invited, and the whole Go Proud movement, the lesbian gay coalition of the conservative movement, all boycotted and I'm gonna say this, threw a damn hissy. They did. They threw a hissy. Well, you know, Willie, that's just not very politically correct. No, it isn't. They threw a hissy. And a lot of people threw a hissy, too, with them. So all that being said, is this the time that we, because of some of the things we just talked about for the first hour, is it time to decide that we're going to have to move forward in an 80% kind of way? And what I mean by that is that having purity tests, conservative purity tests, and having the whole idea that we would walk in some sort of ideological lockstep or lock think, is that really going to remain the standard, or is the 80% standard the 80% standard? Is that what we're going to have to go by moving forward? Because there's some things that simply have to change. And if they don't change again, and I'm not Debbie Downer, I'm not Donnie Downer, I'm not Glenn Beck. I can only listen to a little bit of Glenn because he makes me so sad. I'm like, oh, I guess it's over. I feel like Jim Jones, like he's Jim, like Glenn Beck's gonna have a Jim Jones moment. You remember the movie at the end when it was all over and Jones is caught? He's sweating. He's in the tent. You know what? He's in the tent and he's calling everybody and he's passing out the poison Kool-Aid. Come on, children, it's time to go home. Beck, I think Beck's going to have one of those moments. He's going to call people in the Dallas Stadium, and if he starts passing out Kool-Aid, get the hell out. Get out. Run, take your children. Shoot your way out if you have to. I love Glenn, but sometimes it's just too much. But the idea, because it's not hopeful. I hope that it's, you know what, my prayer is that this is hopeful, that there is something we can do. You know, there is something we can do. And if you change the tax code, because if you change the tax code, if you change to a simpler program where there is not a competitive tax advantage to have, no lobbying. Well, lobbying gets cut down well. You know, that's the idea. The idea is to give them less room, and that for you and I to stay engaged and stay right there in all the officials that we elect faces, whether they are in Congress at the national level, whether they are in your state senate or your state house, whether they're on your county commission or your city council, or especially in your school board. Think about, I live in a place where we live in the eighth largest school district in the country. They're in charge of hundreds of millions of dollars, and nobody knows what they're doing with it. Hundreds of millions of dollars. Our school boards around the country are in charge, and nobody goes to those meetings unless there's some crazy thing at a school going on. Our jobs is to get involved at every level. No, there's no way that you can be responsible for all of it. It's too much. That's why we have to divide it up. You know, that's the deal. That's what we have to do. We have to divide it up. All right, we're going to take a little break. We'll be back with more of the Liberty Newscast, the special PM edition, right after these messages. We appreciate you being here. And we're going to talk about what's going on in CPAC and how important it is to the future of the conservative movement. We'll be right back.
The Lincoln bedroom. Then there was
no controlling legal authority.
Now there's a whole new way to buy access to the president. Introducing Organizing for Access. For just one easy payment of $500,000, you too can get the privilege of quarterly meetings with President Obama. You could even become an ambassador.
Excuse us? This just looks bad. It looks like the White House is selling access.
Don't listen to him.
They get the access while you get to write a letter?
Now, thanks to Organizing for Access, painful letter writing is a thing of the past. Why waste your money on expensive corporate lobbyists? We beat their price because we sell direct to you. But wait, you might be wondering.
I don't want somebody else pulling my strings. They write the checks and you get stuck with the bill. We've got to change how business is done in Washington.
But with Organizing for Access, change miraculously disappears. Incredible.
That suggests that access to the president is being sold.
But I would direct your questions to them.
You're not denying the point that if you give $500,000 or more to this group, you get access to the president.
I would refer you to the organization.
Wonder what candidate Obama would say about this.
I'll love you back.
Order now, and we'll throw in a private meeting with Vice President Joe Biden completely free. Or pay $1 million, and you don't have to meet with Biden. Ever.
Unchained.
Call today and become a charter member of Organizing for Access today. We accept all major credit cards, personal checks, and large sacks of cash.
They get the access while you get to write a letter.
Buy a shotgun. Buy a shotgun.
Joe Biden. Remember this?
If you want to protect yourself, get a double-barrel shotgun. Fire two blasts outside the house.
Now Biden has more words of wisdom. He said to keep someone away from your house, just fire the shotgun through the door. Just fire the shotgun through the door? Whoa, Joe. Hope your neighbors call first before coming over. Instead of gun control, maybe President Obama needs Biden control. Biden and Obama, they don't understand self-defense, and they don't respect your rights.
Where do you want to go to lunch?
I'm having a stroke.
Did you hear what I said?
I'm having a stroke.
Why aren't you answering me?
I'm having a stroke.
What's up with your face?
I'm having a stroke.
That's not normal. Is something wrong?
I'm having a stroke.
Are you having an allergic reaction?
I'm having a stroke.
When someone is having a stroke, they may not be able to say it with words, but their body language will tell you loud and clear.
I'm having a stroke.
You just need to know the sudden signs. Look for FAST. F-A-S-T. F, face drooping. A, arm weakness. Or S, speech difficulty. Then T, time. Time to call 911 immediately, because the sooner they get to the hospital, the sooner they'll get treatment. And that can make a remarkable difference in their recovery. Know the sudden signs. Face, arm, speech, time. Spot a stroke fast. Visit strokeassociation.org. Brought to you by the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
All right, welcome back to the Liberty Newscast, the special two-hour PM edition. PM, extra strength. I'm not sure what that means. Maybe it puts you to sleep faster. I'm sure. Listen, folks, we appreciate you being here. This is Liberty Newscast. It's a brand new thing that I've been doing since February 1st. And you can look back in the archive and look for Liberty Newscast. We did some shows on another sign-on, but Then we sort of came back here. There's also some Google Hangouts, so there's some YouTube videos out there. If you want to check those out, just type in Liberty Newscast Midday Edition, and you'll find them. And we're building this thing as part of the LibertyNews.com family that's wholly owned and a subsidiary of Grassfire Nation. Go to GrassfireNation.com for some fantastic resources from the conservative movement, including Steve Elliott's book, Living in Exile, that shows how we are going to survive whatever happens in the next little bit. It's a book of some real live strategies and some real live hope. That's Surviving in Exile. You can get your copy for any amount of donation, $4 or $5 to cover printing costs will be appreciated, but you get two copies, one to keep and one to share. That's grassfire.com. We appreciate it. All right, listen, again, CPAC is going on right now, and some great things are going on, even with all the controversy that has gone on about CPAC. There are some great speeches going on, and there's some great some great hope. And it seems like there's a little different of attitude about a lot of the speeches, especially some of the beginnings of the speeches. As a matter of fact, let's see here if we can crank one of these bad boys up. There you go. We'll do this one. This is Senator Rand Paul and the beginning of his speech. I got a giggle out of it. You know, maybe you don't think it's funny, but I think it's funny as heck.
I got 10 measly minutes. But just in case, I bought 13 hours worth of information. I also came with a message for the president, a message that is loud and clear, a message that doesn't mince words. Well, that's not exactly what I was thinking. However, I think he may have distilled my 13-hour speech into three words. The message for the president is that no one person gets to decide the law. No one person gets to decide your guilt or innocence. My question to the president was about more than just killing Americans on American soil. My question was about whether presidential power has limits.
All right. I want to say, if you didn't hear the guy from the audience, his comment was, "Don't drone me, bro," which from the famous "Don't tase me, bro." I you know what, I like that he kept it light in the beginning. I like that he came out with some binders and, you know, and the whole idea. Is Rand Paul the person? I don't think that we can deny Rand Paul's conservative credentials, okay? I mean, you may be able to, but I'm not in a position where I think that I can go against his conservative credentials. But is Rand Paul the kind of individual that's going to be able to do what? Go 80%. Oh, what's that mean, Willie? Are you saying compromise? We shouldn't compromise. No, we should win some freaking elections. How about that? We spent a whole hour with a couple of examples of why it's important to win elections. And that if we don't start winning some elections soon, New Zealand's looking good. You know what I'm saying? New Zealand's looking awfully good if we don't start winning some elections soon. But is Rand Paul the kind of person that's going to be able to make, you know what, bring, and I'm not, and I, you know what, and I'm not saying that we need to go out there and
we need to get the independence.
Well, I'll tell you a little story. Here's a dirty little truth. In a lot of the battleground states, guess who won a lot of independence? You ready? Mitt frickin' Romney. Yeah, what? Yeah. So So that strategy to win independence worked while alienating the base who stayed home. And thus, we got McCained again. So, yes, the strategy in a lot of the battleground states to appeal to independents, that strategy worked, except it didn't win Mitt Romney the election. My friend who is the CEO of American Majority, Ned Ryan, was on my program a little bit ago, and what he said struck in my spirit like thunder. Here's the deal. Policy is politics. Politics is policy. They're the same thing. Because if you don't win elections, you don't get to set policy. I'm going to be like my pastor. Did you hear what I said? Did you hear what I said? No, that's not my pastor. My pastor does say, did you hear what I said? But you hear what I said. If you don't win elections, you don't get to set policy. You don't get, if you win elections, you get to be Dianne Feinstein, and you get to be Dick Durbin, who has said that these rights that are in the Constitution are not absolute. Huh? Why? Because they want a whole bunch of freaking elections, and they run the Senate. So there are, like the president said, and he is correct, that elections have consequences. That's why it's important to win them. That's why it is definitely important to win them. Is Rand Paul the kind of individual that can lead Republicans in the victory? Is it possible? Let's listen to a little more of his speech a little down the line. We'll start, what the heck, we'll start right there. Go, Rand.
Squeeze more money out of those who are working. He's got it exactly backwards. I'm here to tell you that what we need to do is keep more money in the pockets of those who earned it. Look at how ridiculous Washington politicians have behaved over this sequester. The president did a big old woe is me over a $1 trillion sequester that he endorsed and he signed into law. Some Republicans joined him. But the sequester didn't even cut any spending. It just slows the rate of growth of government. Even with the sequester, the federal government will grow over $7 trillion over the next decade. Only in Washington can a $7 trillion increase in spending be called a cut.
All right. I agree. That about Washington drives me nutty. It drives me, again, making New Zealand look better and better every day. Except that I don't want to fly, and I don't want to fly over all that water. Maybe it can be transported there like in Star Trek. But in any case, here's the idea, though. What I think Rand Paul is good at doing is boiling down what others have made complex to the simple and being able to relate that message. What community could you not go into and say this? It is more important that the money that you earn, you can keep. That's the most important thing. That makes more sense. Does it make sense that you earn money and give it to Washington to dole out however they want to, or does it make sense for you to keep it? Because that's what we're talking about, right? That's what we're talking about. So when I listen to Rand Paul, that's what I hear. I hear that it is better that the money that I earn, the money that you earn, you get to keep. And then you can spend it however the hell you want to spend it. this seems simple. This is so simple. Why was it impossible for John McCain to relate this in every single community? Why is the GOP struggling with this? We talked a little bit about this before, a little earlier in the show. why is the GOP struggling with this one very simple concept? Why are they struggling with this one very simple concept? Here's a very simple concept, and I'll say it again. Let's see. I have some people in the chat room and listening. GGT and John, you guys. Does it make more sense for you as wage earners to keep more of your money? Hell, all of the money that you earn. Does that make more sense than giving it to Washington, to sending it away to Washington for people who don't have any connection to you or your life or your lifestyle or your family to spend however they want? What makes more sense? Does it make, I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. Why is the GOP so bad at that? You know, I'm a public school kid. I'm a public school guy. I can do that. I think that I have related that message to those who are listening pretty well. And if I have, type one in the chat room. If I have not, type two. And then if I haven't, I will go bang my head against the wall. Well, not right now, but later when you can't see it, so I can cry. You know what I'm saying? Is that simple enough? Why can't the GOP do it? My deal is this. Thank you. My deal is this, is that we've got people like John McCain and Lindsey Graham and people like Olympia Snow and others that are benefiting, that are in positions because government continues to grow, continues to be more, it continues to grow, and it continues not only just to grow in size, it continues to grow in scope. When Dick Durbin says in a Senate Judiciary Committee that not all these rights are absolute. When people like Dianne Feinstein in the same Senate Judiciary Committee meeting says that, you know what, they've got these other 2,000 guns. Is that enough? They don't really need that. Who the hell is she to decide what I need? What I need is my money. What I need is my money. And you know what? I can make decisions as an adult in America on my own. Thank you so much. But like they said in my neighborhood, you hit my mama? Nanny Bloomberg? Let me talk about that in a second, too, because I love that. I love that story. Is it time that some of the rest of us, who may only walk 80% with some of these folks, can take some of the most basic of the conservative message and start talking to people in our community, start talking to people in every community? In every community. You know what? I can't find a demographic that doesn't accept that very simple premise that we just laid forth just now. And I don't care if you are an illegal alien or you and your family been here for the past 400 years in this continent. I don't care if you consider yourself black or African American, Native American, Asian. It doesn't make any difference. That simple message is one I believe that everybody can relate and can relate to. It benefits every community, no matter if your community is wealthy or your community is emerging here in this country, because we've got some emerging communities. Why is the GOP so bad at it? Well, because they're consultant-led to start with. And there again, there are people in the GOP, again like Graham and like McCain and others, Snow and some others, that benefit from this, that benefit from this bloated, consultant-led, lobbyist-fed government scheme that continues to go on in this country. It's consultant-led and lobbyist-fed that continues to go on in this country. And not until we out here have a sort of insurrection and call the spade a spade, and not worry about who we offend and tell the truth repeatedly, will things change. Listen, I need to talk to another. We're running out. I can't believe I can, because I've got a big mouth. I'm running out of time here. Let's hear a little bit of the defeated vice presidential candidate Paul Ryan. Well, I know what a terrible way to put that. I kind of like Paul Ryan. Let's listen to a little bit of Representative Ryan's speech at CPAC.
How about it for Janesville, Wisconsin? Thanks for that shout-out. I appreciate that. That's great. Hey, I'm so happy to be here. You know, we all need a break from the mess in Washington. And I just got to say, it is nice to be in a room full of conservatives for a change. Thank you. It is time to take stock, to catch up with friends, and to plan for the future. So I am grateful for the chance to speak with you, and thanks for this opportunity. You know, this has been a really big week. We got white smoke from the Vatican, and we got a budget from the Senate. The Senate, they call their budget a foundation for growth, restoring the promise of American opportunity. Wow, I feel like saluting already. But when you read it, you find that the Vatican's not the only place blowing smoke this week. You see, the Democrats, they call their budget a balanced approach. The thing is, they never balance the budget, ever. In fact, they call for another $1 trillion-plus tax hike on top of even more spending. If we did nothing, meaning not pass their budget, the government would save money. Look, we take the opposite approach. I am proud of our budget because it's changed the conversation. Today, we're not talking about cliffs or ceilings or sequesters. We're talking about solutions, and that's how it should be. Our budget expands opportunity by growing the economy. It strengthens the safety net by retooling government, and it restores fairness by ending cronyism.
Right. You know, I'm not so sure that, you know, and I think I was before, that Paul Ryan is through. Now, should Paul Ryan run for president? I don't know. I like the line that, you know, the Vatican isn't the only place blowing smoke. I thought that was a great line. I thought it was funny. I thought it was a great applause line. I laughed. This is the third time I've seen it, and I laughed the third time too. But again, this is what we're dealing with, folks. This is the kind of thing that we're dealing with. We're dealing with now the Senate, the Democrat-controlled Senate, has decided. Oh, you want a budget? You want a budget? I got a budget. Here's a budget for you. Give me a moment. Give me some more of your money. Which is absolutely amazing. $1.5 trillion in new taxes after they just had the biggest tax increase in the history of man, of this country anyway. They want another $1.5 trillion, and they still add $7 trillion to the debt. It is an amazing, scary thing. There are people in my chat room who say that he should run for the Senate again, but they're not sure if he's presidential material, and I'm not either. I'm not sure. I am glad that Representative Ryan is part of the discussion, because I think that he is the one that has had the intestinal fortitude to put his name out there and go head to head with the president, to suffer the slings and arrows and go head to head with the president. I'm not sure if he, I don't, and you know what, anymore, I'll tell you what. I'm not so sure what presidential material is, even. Are you? I'm not even so sure what that is. Is Barack Obama presidential material? I mean, is he? He won two friggin' elections. He won two friggin' elections. He's going to be president for as long as you can be president nowadays. So I don't know. I'll bring that name up in a little bit because there's another name out there that's got to be part of this conversation about 2016. I'm not really all that hyped about 16. I'm trying to get to 14. We can hold on to the House and gain some seats in the Congress. Some people don't believe that he won. And we find out almost every day I've reported on the Liberty Newscast some nonsense that's gone on in Ohio. There was a nun in Ohio, and excuse me, this is why I don't watch the chat room, because you guys think we go down the rabbit trails. but there was a nun who voted for herself and her dead nun friend. There was somebody, I mean, same thing, somebody voted for a dead relative. And, of course, you know, the poll worker there, not the poll, like, stripping poll, but the poll worker there who said that she voted for the president twice, she got her niece to vote for the president twice, and she voted for the president for everybody in her house on an absentee ballot. She voted for the president six times. And I'm sure that there, you know what, my gut is that's not even, I mean, those three people aren't the only ones, or six people aren't the only ones, that this went on a lot. When you're talking about during election day, November 6th, that in Philadelphia and other places around the country, Republican poll watchers were being kicked out of voting polls and being replaced by people from the new Black Panther Party. Come on now. When we're talking about districts that had more people vote for Barack Obama than actually live there, and there are voting precincts that had exactly, I was getting there, John, that had everybody in the damn precinct vote for Barack Obama. 100%. How's that possible? How's that possible that everybody in this precinct voted for Barack Obama? Is that possible? It's impossible. And I don't care if it's a predominantly Black precinct, because 337 here in Hillsborough County, where I live, is a predominantly I live in a bright rainbow bright blue district. Let me help you. That's where I'm trying to get to the point where I live, and not even in this district was it 100%, because I live in this district and everybody in my house, and I'll tell you, there are three Republicans on my block and they all live in this house. They all live in my house, so it's not even possible here. So this whole idea that any district can be 100% Barack Obama, it's impossible. But do you challenge it? Well, I guess not. I guess it's not challenged. So that's why this whole winning election thing for me is very, 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 very important. And we're going to listen to a couple more of these speeches. We got somebody mentioned, before we go to break, somebody mentioned Jeb Bush. Now, Jeb Bush, and again, I'm in Florida, very popular governor here. He started the Citizens Last Resort Insurance Program that's screwing people now. That was kind of his baby. Another Republican governor, Charlie Crist, who's now a Democrat, sort of amped that up to an impossible level where Citizens, which is the insurer of last resort, is screwing folks. And he started an education program here in the state called the Florida Comprehensive Achievement Test. That, you know, basically if you don't pass it, you don't get out of high school. You don't get a diploma, is what it is, and that's very controversial, or was very controversial. But other than those two main things, he was very popular governor. I just don't know. I think people are bushed out. I really do. We had this conversation today on the Ed Dean radio program You can go to Ed Dean. You can go to eddeanradio.com and check out my friend Ed Dean, a great conservative, great guy, broadcasting on AM and FM here in the North Florida, in the North Florida area. But the idea is that I think even conservatives and Republicans are bushed out. How frankly, from a strategic point, how easy is it to run against another Bush? How easy is it to run against another Bush? Pretty easy. Pretty easy in the strategery. I love that word. That's the funniest thing ever. And the idea is that when we want to run another election, yeah, we may have to. You know what? And GT is right. We may have to run against another Clinton. Maybe I'm not so sure that's going to happen though. I really don't. Although I don't see anybody on the Democrat front that is a rising star other than the mayor of New Jersey. Watch out for that guy because he's a superhero. He runs into burning buildings and pulls people out. Mayor Cory Booker. Watch out for that guy. I'm just telling you. Watch out for Cory Booker. Superhero, black, young. Runs into burning buildings, can leap tall buildings with a single bound. This guy's a superhero, and is doing his best to bring Newark, New Jersey, the land of my birth, back from the dead. So again, I don't want to say, oh, he speaks so well. he's got an idiot. Come on now, of course he's educated, college educated dude. So again, that's the deal. I don't know if the Dems are all Clinton out either. I mean, they love themselves from Clintons, that's for sure. But I don't know if that love, would runs over to Hillary. Yeah, they can run a bunch of history. Oh, the first woman. We gotta do it. We did the first black. Like you did the first interracial guy. But it doesn't flow as well off the tongue. We give to the first woman. Yeah, I can see them trying. I can definitely see them trying to do that. But I think a better choice for them is Cory Booker. I think someone like that would be a lot more formidable. And I'm telling you, if Cory Booker shows up, thank you so much, John. I appreciate it. If Cory Booker shows up, good night. On the docket, you heard it here first. All right, we'll take a short break. We'll be back. With more of the Liberty Newscast, our special two-hour edition, right after these messages.
The year was 1976, and Ronald Reagan had just lost a hard-fought battle for the nomination that had reached the convention floor. This is Steve Elliott. For Reagan's team, it was a devastating defeat, made even more bitter by the fact that this was likely Reagan's last run for office. After all, by 1980, Reagan would be the oldest man ever to run and win the White House. The next day, as Gerald Ford took the stage to accept the nomination, he unexpectedly called for Reagan to join him. Chants of speech, built to a roar with each step he and Nancy took. Nancy later recalled Reagan saying to her, quote, "I haven't the foggiest idea what I'm going to say." The Gipper, having just been thrown into political exile by his own party, proceeded to deliver a stirring and impromptu speech that left many in the arena saying, "We nominated the wrong guy." As close advisor Martin Anderson recalled, Reagan, quote, "never gave up. It was this incredible crushing defeat, and it didn't crush him. He just came back up, shook his head, and said, 'What's next?'" The Gipper spent the next 3 years primarily at his ranch in California, researching and writing radio commentaries that were broadcast across the country. For years, it was assumed that Reagan simply was the voice for those commentaries. But now we know that Reagan personally penned over 90% of the radio content broadcast following his 1976 political exile. Ronald Reagan understood the core principles of thriving in exile, to build and to plant. During this late-in-life political exile, Reagan carefully honed the principles and policies upon which the 1980 revolution was built. There's much more to Reagan's story in the pages of Thriving in Exile. If you haven't done so already, please request your two copies, because the same challenge and the same opportunity stands before us today. In the face of our current political exile, and the shrinking economy, and the rising tide of statism, and even some of our so-called friends blaming all of these problems on us, we can rise and meet the challenge and build a better future for our nation and our families. Thanks for all you are doing, and together, let's build. I'm Steve Elliott.
Let me drive.
How do you know when it's time to give up the keys? When your dog grabs your keys from your lap and your lap is on the floor. Yep, it's Jeff Foxworthy for Rad saying, when you party, be sure to designate before you celebrate.
If you want to make it home alive, let me drive.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, Rad, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Just please don't drink and drive. It's not fun.
All right, welcome back to the Marine Newscast, a special two-hour Friday night edition. I like doing this. This is fun. Maybe we should do more Friday night editions. If you think we should, send me an email at libertynewscast@gmail.com. That's libertynewscast@gmail.com. And in the subject, write Friday night fun. If you want us to do more, we'll do more, because it's not about me. This is not about me getting on and pontificating and doing all that. That's not really what it's all about. It's about, are we delivering the information that you need? Am I being encouraging? Am I giving you some hope? Am I giving you some ideas to think about? I'll tell you what, I'm not here to change your mind. You know, a lot of people who vehemently disagree with me, listen sometimes, and I'm telling you what, I am not here to change your mind. I'm not. I'm here to present the truth as I see it. And if I give you something that you think about later, great. If I don't, great. That's not great. That kind of disappoints me. I hope to spark your thought anyway. We're going to talk about two other guys. One of them we had a small conversation with about in the chat room, but I want to play a little bit from Senator Tim Scott. Senator Tim Scott is now filling the seat of Jim DeMint. Nikki Haley I like to think I had some small part, because I tweeted like a crazy person to Nikki Haley. Tim Scott, he's the only play. He's the only guy. You got to do it. Do it now. Don't be dumb. Come on, Nikki. You can do it. Be brave. The sooner the better. And I was pleased as punch when it happened. This is some of U.S. Senator Tim Scott's speech at CPAC.
For talented, young, committed, conservative leaders who can help us take this nation back to the America that we all want and cherish and care for and came here to fight about. Ladies and gentlemen, this great senator from the great Palmetto State of South Carolina is here to talk to us about how that movement works, the leadership that America needs, and his vision for getting America back to work and economic prosperity. Help me applaud diversity in the best way that conservatives can, and that's by extending our hands through conservative principles to all of America. Ladies and gentlemen, the great senator from the state of South Carolina, Tim Scott.
Wish I had a talk.
Good evening. Good afternoon. Thank you. And that's a governor with good hair. I tell you what. You know, when you're bald and you're trying to be beautiful, you got to talk about somebody else's hair. Anyway. Well, thank y'all for being here. And how many red-blooded conservatives are in the room? Oh, yeah. I can't hear you over here. Are any red-blooded conservatives in the room? We're going to continue to expand the opportunities for conservatism throughout this nation. And I'm going to tell you how, and I'm going to tell you why. And let me just tell you a quick story. Anybody willing to listen to a quick story? All right, good, good. Well, one of the most important days in my life happened in August of 1982. I was a 16-year-old, rising senior, and a football star in my own mind. My mom and I, we shared a car because we were po, not poor, but P-O, just po. And so I'd have to drive her to work 45 minutes and that drive back 45 minutes. This one Friday afternoon, I drove her to work. I was driving back. Actually, it was Friday morning. And I got kind of sleepy. Anybody ever got a little sleepy when you're driving? Yeah, me too. And so I started rolling the windows down. Now, note, I didn't say push the button. I had to roll the windows down. And then I rolled the windows back up. And then I turned the heat on. And then I turned the heat off. I turned the AC on. And then I turned the AC off. I turned the radio on. And then I turned the radio off. And the next thing I knew, I woke up driving down the road at 70 miles an hour. And I did what any good 16-year-old would do when he wakes up driving 70 miles down the road. I panicked. So I slammed on the brakes and I jerked the steering wheel at the same time. Anyone knows what happens when you slam on brakes and you jerk the steering wheel at the same time? You roll. And my car started to roll back into traffic. I remember going back in traffic and hitting a car. And my body started heading towards the windshield. So I grabbed onto the steering wheel. And I yelled for help. I yelled, Jesus! And glasses went everywhere. And we tumbled back. I was heading in this direction. From the south, we don't know the difference between east and west. So I was heading in that direction. And I came back going in that direction. And my car landed in a ditch heading in the other direction. Glass was everywhere. And I was laying on the side of the car, inside the car still. And I could hear people yelling and running towards me. I heard this one lady very specifically. And she yelled, I think he's dead. I think he's dead. And I yelled back, I'm dead. I'm dead. Highway patrolman came and the EMS showed up and I remember the highway patrolman, he kneeled down and he said, son, your mom is going to be happy you're alive. I was laying there with glass in my back. I looked up at him and said, sir, you don't know my mama. She's going to kill me. Because this was her first car, a 1982 Corolla, ugly brown car. But what I learned from that was this. But I was so fixated on the what, the car. And what the officer was trying to teach me was about the why. Why my mother would be happy that I was alive and she would not be concerned about the what. I believe that our future is amazing for conservatism. Because I think that as we help to connect the American people's why with our what's, the policies that we stand for, that we will win people. And when we win people, we will win elections. John Maxwell said it very well when he said that when you find your why, you find your way. When you find your why, you find your way. And that's...
You see, how hard is it? I love the little story. I played the whole story. I love the little story. You know, wrecking your mama's car. That guy, I love that. You don't know my mom. But, you know, and why can't GOP figure out that if we tell people why, Not the what, but if we tell people why, if we're able to go into every community, if we're able to go into every hamlet and every valley and say to people, this is why. This is why conservative values work. Here's how it works in East St. Louis. It works that it works there, and it works in Hyannisport. It works in Miami. It works in Watts. It works in Tampa. It works in Nashville. It works in Dallas. It works in Duluth. It works in Seattle. It works in Washington, D.C. It'll work everywhere. This is why empowering people works. Everywhere it is tried and everywhere where it is allowed to thrive, empowering the individual works. Making the individual responsible for their own future is a plan that always works. It works on the microscopic level in your home. It works in your community. It works in your city, in your state. It's a thing that works. It is so encouraging. See, tonight's encouraging to me. It is so encouraging to me, and that's why I watched these speeches from CPAC. I didn't get to go, but I did watch these speeches because this is what the GOP needs to hear. This is what the consulting class needs to hear. Now, the consulting class can't do this. They can. They don't know how. This is why. This is the most important CPAC, in my opinion, this is the most important CPAC in recent history. Because we need to hear these messages, and we need to not wait. We need not wait till 2016, in February, to start telling folks. Start telling people now. Folks, go to libertynews.com right now and click on the video block. The speeches I've played are already there. Listen to them. Do it right now. I know that there are many people in the chat room, but I happen to know there are a whole bunch of people who are listening, and I appreciate that. I do. Go to the video block on the libertynews.com site, and all these speeches are here. They will encourage you. They will give you ideas to go out in your community. Start getting the work done today. Listen, we got a few more. We only have a few more minutes left. There's one more name I want to talk about. That's Tim Scott. No, Tim Scott is not ready for the presidency. I like him. Look into Tim Scott. Tim Scott is, you know what? Tim Scott is good. Tim Scott is making it happen, and you know what? We really appreciate the job that Tim Scott is doing. We got one more person to talk about. We're going to talk about Marco Rubio. A lot of people, when you say the name Marco Rubio, some people just fate like he's the Beatles, like he's a member of the Beatles, and other people just, you know what, they just can't. And you know what, and somebody was in the chat room and they said that they just can't. And I asked them why. Actually, I told them why. I said immigration. I asked them, and they said, "Yep, he can't do it," because of his view on immigration. Now we talked earlier in the show about we're not going to ever be able to walk in 100% ideological lock think. We're not going to be able to. None of these candidates are going to be able to pass the test and get 100 on it. None of them. Nobody is, especially if you've been in office any length of time. So let's go ahead and listen to little Marco. Marco has a sense of humor. He's drinking a glass of water. I think he could ride that. I think he could ride that for a while. Let's go ahead and listen to a little bit of.
We're starting this afternoon a conservative, a principled leader, a great husband, great father, and someone I'm very proud to call a friend. And ladies and gentlemen, in this time of need, you see in the back America's future, the next generation of conservatives. This is the next generation of conservatives, somebody who epitomizes our road to victories in 2014 and 2016. And without further ado, I want you to join me in welcoming a great national leader who epitomizes a movement, Senator Marco Rubio.
you. Let me just say, I love the hospitality, but this is an exaggeration. One should suffice. Better safe than sorry. Thank you guys so much. I'm so honored to be here with you guys, to be back in CPAC. I don't know if you remember, maybe some of you were here. 3 years ago, I came here when my chances of winning in the U.S. Senate were about as much as my chances of winning a papal conclave. But I did win, and we won thanks to all of you and the help you've given me and your support. Let me tell you why I ran 3 years ago. I ran because I believe this country is extraordinarily special. And like many of you, I believed it's in trouble, that it was headed in the wrong direction. And as we gather here today for this CPAC, 3 years later, I believe that more today than I did just 3 years ago. And we have to do something about it, and that's what we're here to talk about today. Now, what I've sensed from a lot of people that I've been talking to is this fear that somehow America has changed, that our people have changed, that we've reached this point in time and we have too many people in America that want too much from government, and that maybe the changes that have happened are irreversible and that we'll never be the same again. I want you to understand that that's not true. Our people have not changed. The vast majority of the American people are hardworking taxpayers who take responsibility for their families, go to work every day, they pay their mortgage on time, they volunteer in the community. This is what the vast majority of the American people still are. What's changed is the world around us. It's changed in dramatic ways. Just think how much the world has changed in the last 10 years. The global economy is real. We don't live in a national economy anymore. Everything you buy, everything you sell, everything you touch, it's all impacted by things that are happening halfway around the world. The information age is real. It's made our lives easier. It's allowed you right now to take pictures with your phones and tweet every word I say for or against me. It's changed the world, and it's made our life easier. It's also changed our economy. You go into a grocery store today, and you will find machines doing the job that people once used to do. You find today in many businesses that one person, because of automation, can do the work that five people used to do. It's the world around us that has changed. And this has had an impact on our people, on our hardworking people. Many have seen their jobs wiped out. Jobs they've been doing for 20 years disappeared overnight. Many of them, many of them do things the right way. For example, they paid their mortgages on time. And now, when the housing bubble came, they were stuck with a bill for bailing out the banks that caused it, for bailing out the people who took out mortgages they couldn't afford to pay. Everywhere they look, they see trouble around them. They look to Washington, D.C. as if they don't have enough troubles to begin with. Every week, Washington's creating some sort of man-made crisis for them to worry about. And they look at the political process, whether it's fair or not. And what many of them see is they think that one side is fighting for the people that have made it, and all the other side does is fight for government policies to protect the people who are struggling. And they don't want to take anything away from anybody, the vast majority of Americans in the hardworking middle class. They don't want to take away from people that have made it. They don't want to hurt the people that are trying. But they wonder, who's fighting for them? Who's fighting for the hardworking, everyday people of this country who do things right and do not complain, that have built this nation and that have made it exceptional?
All right, that's Marco Rubio. That's the first 15 minutes of Marco Rubio's speech. And you can see all of it in its entirety at the LibertyNews.com site. Now, Marco's big knock right now is his view on immigration. Now, people have talked – I've talked about immigration. I feel – you know what? There's a logistics problem. Let me help you. There's a real live logistics problem. There aren't enough abandoned school buses to round up 21 million people and send them home. There's just not enough. There's not. There's not. Not even in California. There's just not enough abandoned school – or Detroit, where they're actually closing schools. There's just not enough abandoned school buses to round up 21 million people and send them home. And it's something that we need – and there's something that we need to talk about. And I'm not about rewarding people who have broken the law, but it's a situation we have to deal with. I mean, it's a situation that we have to deal with. And I do think that Republicans have a chance to go in and get a real win here. A win that is to take something out of the Democrats' hand and use it. I'm okay with Marco, you know, sort of taking a hit from it. And he did. He took a hit not only from the left. He's taken a hit from a lot of conservatives on this issue. But like we talked about earlier in the show, and this is really the main point of this particular program, are we willing to walk in an 80% to start winning elections? Are we willing to do that? well, not in that part of the speech. He didn't mention immigration. I don't think he mentions immigration anywhere in the speech. I don't think. I don't remember. we've got a Marco hater. Oh, he doesn't hate him. He just doesn't support him. yes, for anybody but Rubio. But from a strategic standpoint, let's talk about strategery because we're running out of time here. We only got about 4 minutes. Strategery, is this the kind of guy that can be a senator, be effective? Is this the kind of guy that can run for vice president in 2016 and win? Because the idea now is we have to win. If we lose, it doesn't make any difference, does it? If you lose, it doesn't make any difference. It only makes a difference if you win. So we've got all these folks here. You know, we heard from Rand Paul. We've heard from Tim Scott today. We didn't hear from Governor Perry, but maybe we'll do that on Monday. Are we ready to look at this group of people and maybe a few more and start deciding as Republicans and conservatives, here's the deal. Is 80%, and I pull 80% arbitrarily, is that enough? Is that enough to support? Because I know a lot of people, frankly, I mean, let's go back to 2008. Was I a John McCain supporter from the beginning? No. And not many people that I know were. But when it came down to it, a lot of Republicans, a lot of conservative Republicans especially, stayed home. At the beginning of the last election cycle in 2012, was I a Mitt Romney guy? No, I'll tell you, I was not. I had said on the show, on my show, on the Lou Austin show, that you know that I would that if the Republicans had a Lipton bowl of cup of soup and some Ritz crackers, that I was all in, which was true. But I'll tell you what, I was not a big Mitt Romney supporter. Both of those, I was wrong both times because both of those guys won the nomination. Did I try to help them win? Of course I did. I'm a good soldier. I'll tell you straight up, I'm a good soldier. But the idea is now, what do we do in 2016? What do we do in 2014? Are we ready to march with the people that we agree with 80%? Or if not that, will we not throw rocks at them? Will we not do what John McCain and Lindsey Graham did to Rand Paul on the floor of the Senate? Are we willing to, if not support them, are we willing to not deter them because of what is exactly, you know, what's the alternative? What's the alternative? Dick Durbin? More Dick Durbin or more... more Dianne Feinstein, more Nancy Pelosi. So if that is our choice, if that is the choice, what do we do moving forward? I'm a big fan of governors, too. Always have been a big fan of governors because they've already done it. We'll talk about that later. We got to get out of here. Listen, thanks. It's been a gas, everybody. It's been a gas. Thank you so much for tuning in to Liberty Newscast, our PM edition. Listen, we do this Monday through Friday, normally at 1 o'clock in the afternoon here on Blog Talk Radio. If you want to hear and see some of our other shows, go to the Liberty.com website. Thank you so much, ET. I appreciate it. You can go to the LibertyNews.com site and scroll down to Liberty Newscast, and there are all the shows that we've done since February 1st. And you can see how we're trying to get better and trying to get better and trying to get better. Not for us, but for you. We appreciate you tuning in this evening. Listen, we got to get out of here. Just like always, go out there and learn something, love somebody, and for goodness sakes, and I mean this from the bottom of my heart, you take care of yourself. And we will see you on Monday, 1 o'clock, on the Liberty Newscast Midday Edition. Again, my name is Billy Lawson. Good night, and God bless.